on air. This is Monday night, April the 24th, and it's time for our NASCAR race review and Hot Topic sound-off here at Fan for Racing Radio. Sal Segala will be joining us momentarily, so I will go ahead and go through our agenda for tonight. In our first half hour, we're going to start with the latest short track news. Afterward, we'll review the ARCA Menards Series at the Talladega Super Speedway. We'll include an ARCA East update as well. We are reserving the ARCA West review for a little bit later in the show, so stay tuned for that. In the next half hour, we review the Xfinity Series and then the Cup Series at Talladega, and we'll include a brief update from the NASCAR Truck Series. In our third half hour, our guest, Sean Hingorani, ARCA West driver for the number 15 for Venturini Motorsports, will join the conversations with Sal and I. And afterward, that's when we're going to review the ARCA West race at Kern County Raceway Park, where Sean Hingorani won the event. So super excited to have Sean on the show with us to talk about his back-to-back victories. We're going to end the episode, of course, with our NASCAR Hot Topic sound-off conversation, and that's with the Fan for Racing crew. And tonight we've got a full house, definitely looking forward to talking Hot Topics at 10 o'clock here on Fan for Racing Radio. Now, joining me now for our preview part of the show, whoops, he was here, now he's dropped, is I was going to introduce Sal Segala, but the call dropped before I got the introduction in there. So anyway, Sal will hopefully be calling back. There he is now. I'll bring him into the queue. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. I had to hang up and call back because I had a really horrible connection.
Oh, I wondered what happened. I was introducing you, and then all of a sudden you were gone.
Oh, I know. I'm like Houdini. I had to disappear for a minute and re-up, and now we're good. No, I'm good. Yeah, I couldn't hear. It was making some weird noises, so.
Sorry
about
that.
I just want to make sure it was me. Oh, no, it's okay. We're good.
We're good. Okay. We're going to get right into the short track news here, Sal. And as I mentioned, I did not get any notes today, so what I'm going to do is just go, we'll start with Racing America, we'll move on to Flow Racing, and then Short Track Scene, and catch what we feel are the highlight stories from those three websites. So let's go ahead and talk about the Southern Super Series is taking part in a historic double at Montgomery Speedway. It'll be the first time the ASA Southern Super Series and the Show Me the Money Pro Late Models are racing together on the same day at Montgomery Motor Speedway. So fans can watch for that coming up this next weekend. Some of this is happening because of a lot of rain delays and rain postponing a lot of these races and causing them to have to double up, Sal.
Yes, that's true. And then, it's just been really, really, it's just been really crazy out there. But, hopefully they're trying to get their races in. I know I've been keeping up with a lot of my photographer friends that are out there, and they keep saying, man, our races are getting, we're getting postponed. We're not racing, and all that stuff. So hopefully they'll get it all going, get it started.
Okay. Exactly.
And then from there, yeah. And then from there, I think if I'm on the same page as you, the next one would be Ty Gibbs building confidence during rookie NASCAR Cup Series season.
Yeah, they do cover some of the NASCAR things as well here at Racing America. So that's a good point, Sal. And there are several NASCAR stories here. I try to focus on just the short track stories, but if you go to Racing America, you're going to see
I'm there.
NASCAR stuff too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm there. So on the bottom, on the header, you got to read the bottom header. And then, like this one, for example, Actor ready to break 38-year drought at Stafford.
Yeah, it's not
1985. Not since 1985 has Stafford held the American-Canadian Tour, and it's going to end this Saturday afternoon. That's in the late model section of the Race in America.
All right, and I know this next story is something that's also at Short Track Scene, so I'm going to move on to Flow Racing here and some of the news at Flow Racing. Let me start with King Corvette Parts and Cars Tour partner for a special four-race bonus. So there's going to be a bonus offered for people winning those races. And from what I can see here, it looks like it's a pretty good-sized bonus.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. I know they were...
It says the driver who accumulates the most points across four races, and those four races include Ace Speedway at Throwback 76, at Hickory Motor Speedway, and South Boston Speedway, and then the season finale, Carrollwood Speedway. The driver who accumulates the most points across those four races are going to receive $10,000. That's going to be a nice payday.
Yeah, it is, and that's something like what the SRL National is also doing. You know, with their national tour, they're going to offer something at the end. I'm not sure what it is. They're still trying to come up with a number, so that's going to be kind of interesting. And then another headline we have on Flow Racing is Carson Quaffle goes back-to-back wins with the Cars Tour at Hickory Speedway this past weekend. So Carson is on a another roll again, looking to hopefully, I think this would be a second championship if he does do it in the Cars Tour. But he won a second race at Hickory Speedway this past weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to see. Always happy to see that. And then some of you will remember we highlighted this at the time, the Legends of Racing, the Bettenhaus recognized at the Indie Film Fest. So the film was produced by Flow Sports Studios and was recognized Saturday during the Indie Film Fest at Indianapolis, Indiana. So very cool for Flow Racing to get that acknowledgement and recognition.
Yeah, it is. And then, there's so much stuff going on here on the.
There is.
Trying to keep up. I'm trying to keep up the, like, even the at ADRA and MCA, which is all drag racing stuff.
How about the Choose Cone?
You know what? You're on Flow Racing?
Yeah, I'm at Flow Racing. It says High Limit Sprint. Choose Cone will be the next big thing in dirt track racing. That's what they're talking about now, the next big thing on dirt. The new high-limit sprint car series, Choose Cone, was a hot topic following the Lakeside Speedway season opener. Some liked it, but some didn't. So that's going to be a hot topic for people.
Okay, so they're going to do the Choose Cone on dirt now because the Choose Cone started on asphalt late and super late because a lot of the races that we do, like what we do at Orange Show, you know, for the pro late models and stuff, we have the Choose Cone over there. We've had it for like the past 5-6 years. You know, we use the Choose Cone, and then they also use it at the Bowery in Las Vegas. They use the Choose Cone.
Exactly. Well, they talk about it on the new High Limit Room podcast hosted by Kyle Larson, Brad Sweet, and Dylan Welch. And it's available over at Flow Racing as well. So I'd encourage everybody to take a listen to that because they're talking about the Choose Cone and how did it work on dirt out there at Lakeside.
Yeah, then, you know what, then we had some sad news coming over the weekend. Also was at Bandimere Speedway. It's going to be closing at the end of the season. They end up selling out. We've had Sporty Bandimere on the show a couple of times.
Yes.
He was with, he used to help out Tony with the Jet Dragsters. But, yeah, mm-hmm. So they made an announcement they made an announcement on Thursday that that this is going to be the last season, that the 65-year-old track is going to be shutting its doors, and they're hoping to find another place for it, but you know, that'll be yet to be seen. So that's just something, if you live in the Denver area, you know, you might want to catch your last race at Bandimere. They got a full schedule of events that you can see on their website.
Okay, thanks for letting us know that, Jay, or Sal. Also, the article I referenced, it was over at Racing America, but it's also over at Short Track Scene. RJ Braun wins the Midwest Tour opener at Slinger, so you can read all about that. It's a super late model race that took place out there. They've also got the Carson Quapel winning the Cars Hickory photo finish, so that's also available at Short Track Scene, Sal.
That was a big win for Carson. I mean, it was a big win for all that, you know. And then you already read about the Keene Parks, the $10,000 bonus. And then something from our neck of the woods out here, from the West Coast, we had Hayden Plybond claims his second Leonard Evans memorial out here at, where was it at? It was at Wenatchee.
Wenatchee Valley Super Oval in Washington State.
Yeah, and actually Wenatchee has a big $25,000 to win race that's going to be coming up here in a couple of months. That's going to be something to look out for, because Hayden Plybond will be part of that. So will Derek Thorne, Jacob Gomes. We're going to see a lot of, might even see Bubba Pollard and a few of those racers, you know, make the journey out here. But that's going to be that was a big race that was added to the schedule.
Yes, indeed. All right, so. Let's see here. Burt Myers wins the Hayes 200 after leaders tangle with 10 to go. That was at Bowman Gray Stadium. And again, you can read about that over at Short Track Scene. Matt Weaver wrote about it. The leaders traded bump and runs, and neither ended up with the win. So we know how that worked out.
Yeah, and then also we had the SRL Southwest Tour. They ran their pro late model division along with the ARCA race this past Saturday at Kern County Raceway, and Lenny White picked up his third win in a row. So far, along with Jacob Gomes, they're both undefeated and along with, let's not forget about Travis Thurkettle in the modifieds. So far, they've each ran three races this season, and so far, Jacob Gomes has won the three super lates, Lenny White has won the three pro lates, and Travis Thurkettle has won all three modified races. So that's going to be something to look forward to when you know, as they make their way out to Irwindale in the middle of in the middle of May.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to talk next here about the race that was won at Talladega Super Speedway by another Venturini car this weekend. Jesse Love earned an ARCA Talladega win with Venturini Motorsports this weekend. So that was pretty big.
Yeah, it was. It was big for Jesse and for the Venturini Motorsports team, you know, to get the win over in Talladega. I know Jesse. He's a local guy from out here also. You know,
he cut his
teeth out here on the West Coast.
Menlo Park.
Yeah, but he also ran for Bill McAnally. He has a couple championships with Bill McAnally in what was known as a K&N West before it went to ARCA West.
Yep. He's 18 years old now. That's hard to believe, Sal, driving the number 20 Toyota for Venturini, and on his second start on a super speedway, Jesse Love powered past Andreas Perez de Lara after a restart with seven laps to go in the General Tire 200 at Talladega. He held off his Venturini teammate, though, Gus Dean, in order to earn that first victory of the season. We had Andreas Perez de Lara on the show Thursday night. He gave us a great interview. And, Sal, if you haven't had a chance to hear it, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to him. He has some confidence. You know, he's a Mexico Series champion, and he was really looking forward to this race.
Well, I can imagine. I'm going to have to...
He ended up in fourth place.
Go back and see. Funny, my computer is blocking me from going into ARCA.
Yeah, I contacted Charlie Crawl about that because I've had the same problem. I can't get into the website either, so I'm reading about it from our website where I have the information about Jesse Love's win.
Yeah, because it's funny because yes, I was in it yesterday.
I know. Something's happened. So hopefully the alert helps. I'm sure I'm not the only one who probably contacted him, but at any rate, I think they know about it at this point. Love dominated the early part of the race after taking the lead at the start of the 76-lap event, but pit strategy near the halfway mark cycled him out of the lead, so he had to work his way back to the front and was running second behind Perez de la with 12 laps left when Caleb Costner crashed. And after the right front tire of his number 93 failed in the third and fourth turns. So Jesse Love indicated, Sal, that he was kind of yelled at after his last super speedway race, that he needed to stay calm behind the wheel. So he worked on that at this race, and he said that he surprised himself at how calm he was behind the wheel coming to the close of the race.
Excuse me. Okay, so I found where you're at now.
Yeah, Venturini actually took both first and second place at Talladega, which was pretty cool to see as well.
It's funny because your link doesn't allow me to see
the results,
but yet I can see the point standings.
Yeah, here's what we'll say about the results because this is all we have. Brett Holmes actually finished in third place behind Gus Dean. Perez de Lara finished fourth for Rev Racing in his first super speedway race, and Sean Corr finished in fifth. Then it was Jack Wood, Taylor Gray, Scott Melton, Frankie Muniz, and Jason White who rounded out the top 10. Greg Manolts, you remember, he won that opening race at Daytona. He entered the General Tire 200 as a championship leader, but he had crashed on lap 16, and that caused him to end up finishing in 32nd place. So do you want to go ahead and do the point standings now, Sal?
Yeah, let me do the points. Let's see, I just had them up here. Right. Here we go. So the points is Greg Van Alst is still in
that's after three
still
races.
Still leading the points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after three races. Frankie Muniz is in second. Tony Constantino's in third. Jesse Love's in fourth. Christian Rose is in fifth. Jack Wood is in sixth. And then from there, then we go down to Tyler Reif. I don't know why they would have Tyler Reif in here.
Yeah, he only raced the one race.
Yeah, I know, which was the Phoenix race.
Yeah,
and then Connor Mozak eighth, and then Andres Perez de Lara is in ninth, and then round out the top 10 is Tony Breidinger.
Yeah, and she's actually in a four-way tie for that spot. Andres Perez de Lara, Tony Breidinger, John Garrett, and Landon Lewis all have 38 points. So that's pretty – or they're 38 points, I should say. So that's pretty amazing.
You know what? They have to make a mistake on the points.
Yeah, I don't think this looks right either. Hell, I was just noticing
it's not
some
right
other things.
Because
Tyler
Wright should now 40. First place isn't worth 47
points.
We're gonna have to
get back to you on these points because this definitely does not look right.
Points aren't right.
And when we do the preview show on Thursday, hopefully they'll have this corrected because you're right. These points do not look right. Now, up next for the Arkham Menards series is on May 6th at 2 p.m. They're going to visit Kansas Speedway out in Kansas City, Kansas for the Dawn 150. Fans who are unable to attend in person can watch the race on Fox Sports 1 or on the Fox Sports app. So stay tuned for that race on May the 6th for the Arkham Menards series. It's really hard because this is the point, Sal, where we kind of highlight some of the articles that are up over at ArcaRacing.com, and we're really not able to do that tonight because we cannot access the site. So let me try this again. Nope, it's still not accessible.
Yeah, it's still down. It's okay. We have time for the to do the Arca West, and then gives a few more minutes with Arca West winner who's going to be calling in.
Yeah, well, I hate to do that because we can't do that all the time, Sal.
I know we can't share, but I mean at this point in time we have no choice. I mean,
but we're also
cutting ourselves short
on that preview, on that review.
I know. I even tried on my phone. And my tablet, and it didn't even let me do it on my tablet or my phone, so the site is completely down.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk about some of the other short track news that we can see here, because I know at Short Track Scene, they have super late models. They have a tab for super late models, pro late models, modifieds, and the other series, which includes the Penty series, the Shootout series, and the Super Modifieds. They also have commentary articles that they put up every now and again there as well. So let's go to the Super Lates. And actually, we've already hit some of that. The late models, yeah, that talks about the bonus, the $10,000 bonus. It says the Cars Tour Hickory has more entries than grid space. That's going to be interesting. That was on April 18th. And 41 cars on that entry list for the late model stock cars. For the pro late models, they had 29 cars listed. So, yeah, that's really a lot of cars for a very short track.
Yeah, it is. I don't even know.
Due to weather forecast, South Boston Speedway, they had to postpone. They had to cancel Saturday night's event. Because of the weather there. So I guess they're going to reschedule that for May 6th. So keep that in mind, that those races at South Boston will take place on May the 6th instead. Modifieds. We talked about Burt Myers winning after there was a tangle up with cars. Caleb Hetty returns to Smart Victory Lane at Hickory Motor Speedway. That was earlier this month. If you missed that, there's a great article about that over at Short Track Scene as well. Are you seeing anything on the other websites, Sal?
No, not really. I mean, it's just basically you have to hit because you got all the drop downs. So, I mean, there's just so much racing out there that you know, and a lot of stuff what Matt's using, he's just using press releases except for the races that he attends. So a lot of it is just the best way to do it is if you go to shorttrackscene.com and the series that you'd like. You know what? It's nice to just, you know, kind of go through the header, you know, and then as the drop downs come in, you know, then you can go to different series like the Southern Super Series. You know, that's a really good series to follow. You know, you get William Byron and a lot of the, you know, some of the Cup drivers. You know, they really like participating in the Southern Super Series. It's been around for a long time.
And there's some great contributors to it. Matt Weaver, of course, is one of those. Andy Marquis, Paul Lambert, Jeff Brown, and Chris Owens all write articles. Also, Kyle Souza all write articles over at Short Track Scene. So these are guys that are really knowledgeable about the Short Track Scene. And they put together some great articles. Same thing at Flow Racing. Remember Rob Blount, Sal?
Yeah.
He's now a contributor, creator at Flow Racing.
Yeah, well, when Flow Racing took over Speed 51, Rob just basically went over to continue at Flow Racing.
And Brandon Paul is also over at Flow Racing.
Yeah, Brandon Paul was the editor-in-chief at Speed 51. And
right.
Rob Blount worked under him. I see him every year when I go to the Snowball Derby. I see him inside the trailer with Speed 51.
Yeah, we need to invite him back on the show. I used to, you know, it's funny because he used to do a show with this other gal, and I used to go on their show as a guest, and, you know, I've seen him at the track a few times as well. And he really gets around. Rob is a good follow if anybody's looking for somebody to follow. And, again, a content creator over at Flow Racing. So you'll definitely want to check him out. And then over at Racing America, I'm trying to see how we can find out who writes at Racing America. Do you know?
I don't know. I already shut that.
You already shut it down? Okay.
Yeah. Since we're done, I shut them down because it slows down my internet over here. We got too many people in this little part I live in.
Okay.
Using the internet.
Let's go ahead and move on. Let me go on to the Xfinity Series then here with Jeb Burton. Jeb Burton won the Ag Pro 300 at Talladega Super Speedway at the age of 30, driving the number 27 Solid Rock Carrier Chevrolet for Jordan Anderson Racing. Shane Whitbeck is his crew chief. It was his second victory in 118 Xfinity Series races. His first win also came at Talladega, and his first victory and first top 10 finish this year. It's also his second victory and fourth top 10 finish in 7 races at Talladega. Sheldon Creed finished second, posting his first top 10 finish in 3 races at Talladega and his 5th top 10 finish of the year. Parker Kligerman finished in 3rd, posting his 3rd top 10 finish in 4 races at Talladega. And it was Parker Retzlaff who finished in 7th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, this race was pretty exciting to watch. It was the kind of hard-nosed, impatient, and thrilling tension that NASCAR fans have come to expect in the final lap at Talladega Super Speedway. In the win, though, it was Jeb Burton taking the checkered flag in a double time double overtime restart to claim the victory in Saturday's Ag Pro 300. He held off the field for his second win, both coming at Talladega, his first win for Jordan Anderson Racing as the team owner across 169 starts in the Xfinity and Craftsman Truck Series combined. Sheldon Creed again finished in second, matching his best finish of his career. Parker Kligerman third. Then it was Cole Custer who won the $100,000 for cash bonus with a fourth place effort. Brendan Poole finished in fifth place in JD Motorsports. It was their first top five finish since 2019. Cesar Baccarella finished a career high sixth place. Parker Retzlaff overcame an early wreck to finish seventh. Greg Galding finished eighth. Then it was Joey Gase and Josh Williams rounding out the top ten. Justin Allgaier won the opening stage, his fourth stage victory of the year. Burton won stage two under caution. There were 28 lead changes among 12 drivers and 10 cautions for 48 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, 106.960 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers in the Ag Pro 300, Sal?
Yeah, it was a good field to finish in the top 10. Good to see Cole Custer finally start getting, start getting some good finishes. You know, of course, Jeb Burton, again, grabbing the win again. You know, I know there's a lot of fans out there that like him, that we're real happy to see him. I know one of the guys that we went to Universal Studios with yesterday, he was really excited for that win for Jeb. He likes Jeb. He's a big fan. But then to see Sheldon Creed continue, this year, with some good finishes. I know last year we seen him in his rookie year, and he was just really never had a – it's like he just couldn't really get a grip on the car or just didn't have any luck.
Yeah, he's starting to come around, though.
Oh, yeah, he started to come around, picking up some good finishes. I know he's up there high in the points, a name we never hear of maybe once every two, 3 years is Greg Galding. And A spot.
With some names we don't normally see up in the top 10, that's for sure.
That's why I said I think I've only seen Greg Galding up there in the last 5 years, maybe twice. If that, Joey Gase, to grab that spot. But of course, Parker Retzlaff, is continuing with a strong rookie season, then just a quick prayer and a shout out to Blaine Perkins, who got in that nasty wreck. I talked to Blaine this morning and he said he just banged up. Not sure if he's going to race this weekend or not. They're still making that decision. I talked to his dad right after the wreck and NASCAR didn't let him give out any information until they basically cleared him. So Blaine texted me when he got out of the hospital yesterday and said that, his eyes are, are kind of bruised up. And, of course, they did the concussion protocol on him and stuff like that. But he says he's sore, but, he's ready to go. So, he said, make sure and thank his team, thank his fans, for the ones that reached out to him,
Let him know car, I was thinking about him as well, because that was a nasty wreck for sure. And when he got out of the car, I could tell he was kind of stunned a little bit. So it was no surprise to me when they said they were taking him for further evaluation. And then I saw his statement today on Twitter as well, where he thanked everybody for everything they did to help him. So that was really good to see. So we'll stay tuned for some news there.
He said he doesn't really remember much. He said he don't remember much. He said it happened so quick.
Quick, and you could tell he was stunned when he got out of the car.
Yeah.
18 cars on the lead lap, Sal. For not the lead lap, but still running at the end of this race. Some of those cars finished laps down. Only 18 cars. Actually, no, all 18 cars finished the full race. One car finished laps down, and that was, he was still running. That was Joe Graff Jr., and he was 8 laps down. But a lot of incidents in this race, which is typical of Talladega. Parker Chase ended on lap 37 due to the damaged vehicle policy. Anthony Alfredo was out because of the accident. Jade Buford and Dexter Stacey and Blaine Perkins, that's the one where all of them were involved, and that took all three of them out of the race on lap 47. Lap 63, Sammy Smith was out because of an accident. John Hunter Nema checked out on lap 81 due to an accident. Jeffrey Earnhardt had a transmission issue, taking him out of the race on lap 83. Josh Berry, Sam Mayer, and Justin Allgaier all out on lap 100 because of an accident. On lap 110, several drivers were out. One driver didn't make it, Derek Krause, because of the damaged vehicle policy. All the rest had their cars destroyed and couldn't go back out. They included Daniel Hemric, Ryan Sieg, Riley Herbst, Kaz Grala, Chandler Smith, and Josh Bowicki. So quite a few drivers involved in accidents yesterday, and we're glad for the most part everybody is safe and sound. And we do hope that Blaine Perkins recovers quickly and he's able to race again this weekend. But if not, we will certainly understand if he sits out a race in order to take care of his health.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he'll be back, you know, and continue to finish out the season.
Yes, indeed. And let's go ahead and cover the points reports, Sal.
All right, for points. Huh. Come on.
We're having our challenges here today, aren't we?
Okay,
I know where you can go for the top 10 anyway. The standings, go to the race page, and they've got the top 16 listed there.
Yeah. That's weird. Everybody's having NASCAR just
falling apart. Technical issues here tonight. The Xfinity Series playoff standings is what they have at Jayski's on that race page.
Yeah, here we go. Standings in the Xfinity Series are as follows. We got Austin Hill leading the points. John Hunter Nemechek in second, and a tractor is running through the center of my page. I just got my page all dirty, and then he drove away and cleaned it all off. Thank you. I'm on NASCAR.com. A tractor went right through the middle of the page and
got
the page all dirty, and then it cleaned it. Chandler Smith in third. Riley Herbst holding on to that fourth spot. Josh Berry in fifth. Justin Allgaier in seventh. Justin Allgaier in sixth in the number seven. Cole Custer in seventh in the double zero. In the eighth spot is still Sheldon Creed. Sammy Smith drops some spots. He's down in the ninth spot. Tenth spot is Daniel Hemric. 11th spot is Parker Klingerman. And Sam Mayer is in the 12th spot. But that'll be taken over once they reset with Jeb Burton, who's got the one race win. Well, actually, the two race wins. One race win.
One race
win. This season so far. One race win. So he'll take over the spot from
he'll put Sam on the bubble.
He'll put Sam on the bubble.
All right. So Austin Hill, of course, has the three race wins. John Hunter Nemechek has two. Chandler Smith with one. Sammy Smith with one, Jeb Burton with one. So those guys all will move up in the point standings with their victories, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and Austin Hill is so far he's our top rookie this year. He's leading the rookie points, along with that. So Austin Hill is having them a really good year.
Marcus Kligerman had a really good start, considering that he had to go to the rear at the start of the race. He had a real good finish, I should say. And so did Cole Custer. After starting from the rear of the field for the start of the race, they ended up in the top 10, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, so still a lot of racing left, a lot more wins for, a lot of these drivers. I'm sure we'll see, we'll see. Hopefully we'll see a win out of Riley Herbst before the season's over.
Yeah, I hope so, too. He's coming awful close. The next race for the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Make sure I got this right. Am I on the Xfinity page? Yes. Okay. The next race is at Dover Motor Speedway this weekend, April 29th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll have qualifying on Friday, April 28th, 3:35 to 4:30, and practice Friday, April the 28th at 3:05 to 3:35. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and Jay and I will include that in our preview on Thursday, so stay tuned for that. Let's go ahead and move over to the Cup Series. The Geico 500 was run by Kyle Busch at age 37, driving the number 8 McLaren Custom Grille Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing. His crew chief was Randall Burnett. It was his 62nd victory in 652 Cup Series races, his second victory in 5th top 10 finish this year, and his second victory in 10th top 10 finish in 36 races at Talladega. Ryan Blaney posted second place finish for his 7th top 10 finish in 18 races at Talladega and his 5th top 10 finish in 2023. He's just still scratching his head about what he needs to do in order to win a race. He comes so close so many times. Chris Buescher finished 3rd, posting his 3rd top 10 finish in 16 races at Talladega. And then Ty Gibbs finished 31st, but he was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So this, too, was an exciting race for the Cup Series. Hold on. I'm trying to get my spot here. Kyle Busch was able to avoid the big one in order to get that victory and stay on track instead of what his crew told him he needed to pit for fuel, and he played the gamble and chose not to pit for fuel during a pair of overtime restarts at Talladega, and he ended up the big winner when it was all said and done. The number 8 Chevrolet had just enough gas to make it to the checkered flag as a half a dozen other lead cars around him were collected in a multi-car accident while maneuvering forward to challenge for the lead on that final overtime lap. So, his second win of the year. Blaney finished 2nd, followed by Buescher, Briscoe, Keselowski, Eric Jones, William Byron, Christopher Bell, Daniel Suarez, and Todd Gilliland. The pole winner, Denny Hamlin, finished 17th. The race ended following that 2nd overtime attempt. There was an accident with 4 laps to go in the race to set up the 1st overtime attempt. And during that 1st attempt, Noah Gragson spun out from the front row. He collected Kyle Larson and Ryan Preece. And on that final restart, Kyle Busch, Ryan Blaney restarted on the front row, and Wallace took the lead on the final lap but spun out after contact from Blaney, forcing the race to end under caution. Stage 1 was won by Chase Elliott, Stage 2 by Eric Almirola. There were 57 lead changes among 21 drivers, 8 cautions for 34 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 146.575 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishes here, Sal?
Yeah, it was a crazy finish. You know, I'm just going to stay away from what I really want to say. But, you know, congrats to Kyle Busch on the win. You know, he's finally getting some luck on his side. You know, running low on fuel, you know, the way he did, you know, and then still get the win, you know, was really, really good. You know, Brad Blaney, gosh, what can you say? He's, you know, between him and Joey Logano, they're really still keeping Penske, you know, on the map. You know, I know during the race, Brad Keselowski was very, very boisterous on the radio, you know, talking, you know, about, you know, the way some of the racing was going. And, but, you know, it's good to see, you know, Brad continue to, you know, to get those good finishes, you know, finishing a strong fifth. I think we're going to see a win from Brad before the season's over. Kyle Busch, like I said, you know, he's continued to be strong. Chris Buescher, you know, gets a third, and it's funny because we kind of bet on NASCAR, and every week they have what they call the field, which is Chris Buescher, Todd Gilliland, Ty Dillon, you know, all the lower class drivers, you know, they'll be going off at like 50, 60, 70, 150 to one. But when it comes to the plate races, you know, they're going off at like 25 to one. You know, the odds are just really, you know, because it's a gimme. Anybody can win it. You know, can win it, you know, and, you know, I know Truex had his issues, you know, but Chastain, he looked really strong at the beginning again, you know, like he was going to get a play win. Chase Elliott looked strong, you know, finished 12th. But all in all, you know, you got to say congrats to Kyle Busch and the Richard Childress Racing team. You know, Kyle came over, you know, and Richard Childress, you know, and he's really making an impact.
He is. You know, and Richard Childress was very complimentary of Kyle Busch, too, in his media interview. I don't know. There's a video on Twitter that's going around where Jamie Little is interviewing Kyle Busch about his victory at the start-finish line. And in the background, Austin Cindric and Martin Truex Jr. are slowly crossing the finish line to finish on the lead lap. And they were joking about it being a photo finish between Austin Cindric and Martin Truex for 26th and 27th place. Those guys were the last cars on the lead lap and able to finish all 196 laps of the race. A couple of drivers, let's see, there's four drivers that finished a lap down, but some of them were also out. Bubba Wallace, one of those drivers out because of the accident, as was A.J. Allmendinger. Joey Logano was still running. He completed 195 laps, and Ty Gibbs ran out of fuel on lap 194, taking him out of the race. On lap 189, three cars, Noah Gragson, Kyle Larson, and Ryan Preece were out of the race. Michael McDowell was still running, but he only got 189 laps in. And on lap 183, it was Harrison Burton out because of an accident. And on lap 141, two cars out because of an accident between Zane Smith and Austin Dillon. So typical for Talladega. You just never know how it's all going to end at Talladega Super Speedway.
Yeah, you know, and actually, you know, he started 36th to finish and finished 20th. You know, it was Riley Herbst drove that car for Rick Ware Racing. You know, after his son, you know, was suspended indefinitely, and they called on Riley Herbst to race this race. You know, and he was the highest finishing non Cup driver, and still finished on the lead lap. You know, so I mean, you know, congrats to Riley. I'm sure for him that was a you know, that was a win for him, you know, to be able to, you know, finish the race on the lead lap, you know, and, you know, to be the highest finishing, he's not the highest one. J.J. Yealey finished 11th.
Oh,
he
okay.
He was highest finishing non-cup driver, yeah. But, I mean, it was still he finished on the lead lap, you know, and, you know, was able to bring the car home, you know, on the lead lap. So, I mean, that's...
He did a good job.
I'm sure that was... Oh, yeah, I'm sure that was big for Riley. I mean, you know, he's, you know...
Poor Riley.
He's kind of a confidence
booster.
So much
heat for being... You know, for, because his dad kind of helps support him. And a lot of people think he's only there because of the money that his dad brings. But Riley Herbst is a good driver. I firmly believe that.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I mean, he puts his time in, you know what, and he's, you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of him. I've been a fan of him since
since
Urendel days. You know what? Yeah, and, you know, and even at Urendel, you know, a lot of the drivers, you know, used to give him a hard time because he was driving two series. He was driving the late models and he was driving in the Urendel truck series. You know, and there was only... He was the only driver doing that because he was the only one that could afford it. You know, but I mean, he never, you know, they never really pushed their star power or their money around. You know what, it was, you know, the kid wanted to race, you know, his dad was able to put him, you know, in a, you know, he didn't want to race off-road, you know, like his dad, following his dad's footsteps. He wanted to race NASCAR and do something different, you know, so his dad, you know, had the money, you know, to do it. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. We talk about that a lot too. We kind of bash the, you know, the kids with the silver spoon.
Yeah, but Riley's a hard worker.
Yeah.
Let me just say one of the big stories today too, Sal, was NASCAR took Kyle Larson's car back to the R&D center after the race because they wanted to study, you know, why his car was banged up so bad in that wreck. And today, they asked Stuart Haas Racing to bring over Ryan Preece's car as well to help them as they analyze that wreck and see what they can do differently to avoid that kind of tearing up of the car. So any thoughts about NASCAR doing that?
You know, I think it's good because they're, believe it or not, there are teams – I'm not saying they compromise the safety of the driver, but there are teams that will compromise the car itself, you know, to try and lighten up certain spots, you know, to get the car to go a little bit faster, you know, so this way, you know, on different sides of the car. And I've seen it at Urendel time after time after time. I've seen it at other tracks time after time, you know, where it's always has to do something with the roll cage. And I think that's why NASCAR wanted to look at that cage and wonder why that part of that cage collapsed the way it should have and it, when it shouldn't have collapsed. Because these cars are built to, they're built to take the hit and they're built to take the, you know, like what happened with Blaine on Saturday, you know, and I think NASCAR is, they're going to check the thickness of that roll cage. And if they find it to be under what NASCAR wants the cage to be, this could be a devastating penalty. I mean, it could be like the most hugest penalty because not only did they compromise the safety of the car, they compromised the safety of a driver, and not only that, but at a plate track, you know, you don't want to compromise nothing like that. And if NASCAR does find something, I mean, I don't know if they're going to handle it internally and not say nothing, or if they're going to have to make it public. But
NASCAR said that they're going to be more transparent with these things. So I hope that that is the case.
Yeah, because when I seen that, and I was talking to a couple friends yesterday at Universal Studios, and I said, look at that cage. I said, that cage should have never, it should never bent like that. I said, because when they test them and get hit from all angles, all different angles. But I've seen cars crushed like that at Urendel before. And what it was the cage was compromised. The steel wasn't the right thickness.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm glad that they are doing that investigation.
Oh, yeah. When that happened, now that's good. And I'm sure that's the first thing NASCAR thought. They didn't have a choice. Everybody's seen it. all the other teams seen it. They had to take it in and get it looked at. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see what they find, and how they're gonna proceed.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be the big thing.
Yeah.
How they're gonna proceed with it.
Yeah, I hope they do come out and talk to us about it. I'm going to be listening to Sirius XM in the morning so I can hear if they come on and interview anybody from NASCAR. And if they don't come on tomorrow, I'll listen again on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay, now,
so,
go ahead.
We need to do the points.
Yeah, we need to do the points for the Cup Series.
Okay, so... All right, so the points real quick. We got Christopher Bell still leading the points. Ross Chastain in second. Kevin Harvick in third. Kyle Larson in fourth. Kyle Busch in fifth. Tyler Reddick in sixth. Martin Truex Jr. in seventh. And rounding out the top eight will be Ryan Blaney, since they do take the top 16 into the chase. And then from there, then we go to Alex Bowman. Alex Bowman, who is the next one. Danny Hamlin sitting in 10th, Joey Logano in 11th, Brad Keselowski in 12th, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in 13th, William Byron 14th, Chase Briscoe in 15th, and rounding out the top 16 is Chris Buescher. But, so far the wins have been spread out. You know, we got
mm-hmm.
William Byron with two wins, Ricky Stenhouse with one, Joey Logano with one, Tyler Reddick with one, Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson each have two, and Christopher Bell has one. So it's neat to see Kevin Harvick up there in the third spot. You know, this is last season, and
mm-hmm.
I know Kevin wants at least one more win before he says goodbye to the series.
Yes, indeed. So we'll kind of look forward to that. Now, Sal, we've got a guest joining us here in a few minutes. Do you want to set up of him coming on the show?
Yeah, so our guest coming on, if you notice, we haven't talked about the ARCA West series yet. But our next guest is, we had him on a few weeks ago when he won his first ARCA West race at Irwindale Speedway. While he doubled that feat this past weekend at Kern County Speedway, picking up the win for Venturini Motorsports in the number 15. And it's kind of ironic because he won it this week with a different crew chief. So he's had two crew chiefs in the last two races.
Who was his crew chief this week?
Gosh, you know what? I had his name written down. Okay.
And I can't get to look at it.
Yeah, I know. I had it written down, and I left all my notes in the car when I got out of the car. I was so tired. And then we can't even go to the ARCA page to see it.
I know.
But anyways, and I'm surprised your story, because you guys didn't use the press release,
Well, let me look.
Win,
I was just going to go through here and see if he mentions the crew chief in here. And I don't see it. But go ahead, Sal, and do the little build-up here.
So he won it after going a lap down because of what NASCAR deemed that he jumped the start to start the race. So he had to come in on the drive-through and go back down. It was a lap down, worked his way up, finally got the lap back, and then at the halfway break, they came in, and he went out and went by Landon Lewis, did a couple of quick okay, here we go. His crew chief was Monin Rahman. Monin Rahman was his crew chief.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually he's a crew chief. He's an engineer for Venturini Motorsports. So he stepped in for Kevin Reed, who had other duties this past weekend. So it was neat to see him win, you know, with two crew chiefs, and just really dominated the second half of the race when they came out from the halfway break.
Mm-hmm. Mhm. Okay. Okay. So yeah, that was really cool. Let's see. I've got two numbers here. I wonder which one he is. Sal, let me figure out which one of these is Sean, and then I'll get right back to you.
Okay. He will be. I will tell you the area code. He'll be a 949 area code.
Okay. Both of these are 949 area codes. Okay, but now I've got it here. I've got one number up here. I'm going to assume that's him. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So.
Okay. So we should have our guests on the show now with Sean Hingerini. We want to welcome you back to the show. Congrats on the win this past weekend at Kern. I know it wasn't the dominating win that you had at Urndale, but you know, it's a little bit more exciting, a lot more racing, and I'll tell you, it was really neat to see you back in victory lane. What was really neat was to get the time to really talk to you, you know, during the day on Saturday, you know, and talk about different things other than racing, of course. But you know, this show is all about racing, and it's all about talking about you and the victory and all the fun your team had. So with that, Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So
it was.
Go ahead. Sal? Go ahead, Sean. Tell us about the win.
It was an exciting win down at Kern for sure. We went a lap down early on, which was we knew it was going to be tough to get back through the field, and we were able to make it happen. The car was really good on the long run, so we had a long green flag run, and the car was stayed underneath me. It was really good, and we were able to get by the leader, get our lap back, and I think after the break, we ended up in sixth place. So we were able to get to the lead from there after the break, so it was pretty exciting going. Going a lap down, we definitely knew it was going to be a really big challenge, and we made it happen.
So when the race starts and NASCAR tells you, you know, you start your race, and they get on the radio and they say, you know, number 15, you know, you jump the start, you know what, you got to come in through a drive-through. What's the first thing that goes through your mind at that time, especially being a young driver, you know, this is your rookie season, you know, getting used to the series, you know, getting used to just you know, just the racing format and all that, because in the other series, it seems like they don't care how far you jump. They're going to let it go.
Yeah. ARCA has their rules. And, I mean, you're not going to – they're going to enforce it no matter who it is or what happens. You just got to follow them. And it really sucks that happened. He fired before me. I just – beat him a little bit to the start finish line. It was a really close one, but you know, it's a game of inches. They call it. I mean, you gotta serve your penalty. So we served our penalty, and we were able to get back on track and get our lap back. So I mean, it wasn't all bad, but definitely not what we wanted.
So this was a first time crew chief. This is, of course, you know, this was his first win. What's it like, you know, when you're on the radio, you know, with your crew chief, you know, you're kind of used to Kevin. You know, and you know, and then you have Monin telling you on the, what exactly did he tell you on the radio? You know, when he told you to come back, when you had to come in for the drive through, and then how does he settle you down? You know, as a driver to say, hey, you know what, the race has just started. We still have 149 laps left.
Yeah, my spotter Billy Venturini, he let me know that we beat him to the line, pit road, and you know that we had to just. We went a lap down, and we had to do what we had to do. So, not much you can do about it, but they talked me through it real good. We were able to get through lap traffic, get by everyone nice and clean. And, my crew chief, Monin, this weekend, he's normally our team's engineer. He crew chiefed me this weekend, did a really awesome job. It was his first win, so I'm super excited for him on that. And, you know, he did an awesome job this weekend.
You know, then as the race starts playing on, you know, you guys are lapped, you know, getting in the laps, and then you know, we had those two last restarts. And it looked like Trevor Huddleston was about ready to pull a Todd Sousa on you, and or, you know, Landon Lewis. You know, I know you and Landon, you know, you guys have your, you guys had your, you know, your moments in the Legends. You know, what was going through your mind, you know, when Trevor got up to, you know, and kind of, you know, kind of got real close to your back bumper?
Yeah, I mean, three laps to go, right? And everyone wants to win. They're going to do whatever they can do to win. Anyone. He knocked on the back door a little bit getting into one. So I knew I had to sail it off into three. I mean, luckily I was able to gather it back up in between one and two. I didn't get too bad of a drive off of two. Sailed it off into three, cleared them, just drove off into the sunset.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was a very impressive win. So as this race is playing out, so far you've gotten two wins on, you know, I'm going to say two of the fastest tracks on the, you know, for the West Series, because when you guys go to Phoenix, you know, it's an open race, you know, for ARCA East, you know, and you know, anyone who wants to come and race, but technically these are your two fastest tracks, you know, for the West Series, and you were able to get the two wins on them. So how does that make you feel, you know, going into, you know, to the rest of the season, you know, when you got Portland coming up, which is going to be a road course, and then you still got a couple of little short tracks coming up?
Yeah, I got an outstanding group of guys behind me. They know what they're doing at all sorts of places, whether it's a long track, short track, road course, whatever it is, they know what they're doing. I'm very confident in what they can do, and I just drive it. And it goes fast. So, I mean, just looking to go fast with all the other tracks and see what we have for them.
So I'm gonna take a different angle now, you know, before I pass over, because I know Sharon has a whole bunch of questions, but I'm going to take a different route now. During the race weekend, you get there, you know, you guys get ready, you know, get the car prepped, you know, then practice and qualifying. So what does a driver do in between all that time, you know, when you're sitting in the hall or whatever you might have, you know, to relax in? During all that time, what is the driver doing while you guys are waiting, you know, to get back in the car?
You know, there's always something to do, whether it be, you know, in between qualifying the race, an autograph session, or in between practice and qualifying, you know, try to drink a lot of water, maybe have lunch. Just, you know, you never really get a lot of time to relax at the racetrack. You're always doing something. So there's always, you know, something to do, and it's pretty busy. Yeah, not too much.
You know, and then it comes, you know, of course, you know, practice, and you guys come in, you know, they work on the car a little bit, and you go off for qualifying, you come back for qualifying, and then comes the time for the fans, you know, time, you know, to come out and have, you know, the autograph session, you know, and they get, you know, get a chance to talk to you and ask for autographs and stuff. What is the one question, if you can remember, of any fan that's ever asked you, what would you say, what was the one most interesting question that was ever asked of you by a fan?
I wouldn't say there's something that's particularly interesting, but there's one common question I get asked a lot, and it's how fast do I go on the racetrack, like how fast do the cars go? But, yeah, I wouldn't say it's something more interesting. I'd say it's something that's more common.
Interesting. Well, you know, I'll tell you, Sean, it was a lot of fun this weekend. It was neat, you know, to see, you know, get your second win, you know. Of course, it's always neat to see, you know, the support you get from your family out there, you know, and your team, you watch, you know, all the different teams that you race for, you know, they all work hard, you know, they all have their own agenda, you know, per se. So as you're coming down, you know, you work with, you drive for Derek Thorne, you drive for Venturini, you know, and whoever else, you know, you're driving for Nascimento. So what would you say is the biggest difference between all these different teams, if you had to take one thing from each team to make it, you know, to put it together, because I know the ARCA right now is your main focus. So when you look at all these teams, is there something that you take from each team, you know, to be successful as you are in the ARCA series?
All them guys run great programs. A lot of learning experience to take away from that, a lot of seat time. You know, Nascimento did a great job, got a lot of races in with them, won races with them, great program. Derek Thorne ran a few races with him. I mean, outstanding super late model program. He's one of the best. We ran good in the cars. So then Venturini, just another awesome program. I mean, I've just been very thankful and happy to be part of such good programs.
Okay, with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon, and I know she has some questions for you. Sean, I just want to say congratulations again, and, you know, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. I also want to give a shout-out to Troy. I know he's on here right now listening, and he does a great job with all the social media stuff.
Okay. Well, go ahead,
Sharon. Okay. Well, again, Sean, thanks for being here again. Real happy to see you get that back-to-back victory this weekend at Kern County Raceway Park. And I'm super excited for Venturini Motorsports because they are typically known as a Midwest team. And I followed Venturini Motorsports for a long, long time in the ARCA Menards series. And to see them venturing out into the ARCA West now and getting wins so quickly is really exciting. What are your thoughts about that? Because a lot of people probably aren't as familiar with Venturini Motorsports out there as we are here.
Yeah, they haven't been to a lot of the West Coast tracks. I mean, and like they've been to Kern before. They haven't been to Irwindale. So it just shows how awesome their program is. I mean, they showed up to the track with just an outstanding car, you know, and Billy Venturini, for him to be able to make the West Coast race the whole season happen is absolutely huge. I mean, it meant the world to me since I live out here on the West Coast, and all I want to do is just run as many ARC races as possible, and running the West Coast is like, it's just so awesome to be able to do that, especially with such a great team.
It really is pretty awesome for you to get that chance with Venturini Motorsports and to race with them. And it was a doubleheader for Venturini this weekend because, as you know, Jesse Love won the race out at Talladega this weekend, and they showed Big Bill on the phone with Billy Venturini talking about the win and wishing him luck at Kern. So it really is kind of a big deal what you're doing out there with Venturini Motorsports. And then add on to that, that you're the first Native American to win are you the first Native American in all of motorsports or just the ARCA Menards series?
It's actually first Indian, but it's in all of NASCAR. Whether it be ARCA, Xfinity Trucks, Cup, just any NASCAR. So,
of Indian descent. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, of Indian descent from India, not Native American. But
yes, okay, I'm sorry. My apologies. So yeah, that's pretty cool that you're able to do that with Venturini Motorsports and be the first of Indian descent to win a race. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. I mean, like I said, these guys do a great job. My crew chief, Monin, he's just so good this weekend, and I'm super excited for him to get the win. I mean, he works his butt off in the shop, and he really deserved this win. So, I mean, just to see how happy these guys are to be able to work on my cars, and they just want to win as much as I do. So, I mean, just got the right guys that we're working with here.
Okay, well, I'm a little short on time here, unfortunately, Sean, but I hope we get a chance to talk with you again somewhere down the road here, and I'm sure there's probably some more wins in your future. So, Sean Hingorani, who do you want to give a shout-out to before we say goodnight here tonight?
Mobile One Racing, Gear Wrench, Fidelity Capital, Toyota, Venturini Motorsports, Derek Thorne, Crew Chief Monin, Billy Venturini, everyone who helps out. I know I'm forgetting some people, but just so many people that help out, and I can't thank them enough for making everything happen.
Absolutely. You've really done a really good job with them, and I'm sure that they appreciate racing with you. Now, I know you're at Sean Hingorani on Twitter, and you're also available on Facebook. Where else are you available to follow?
On Instagram, Sean.Hingorani, and I also have a website, SeanHingorani.com.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll look forward to asking you some more questions on the next go-around here, Sean, and your next race is coming up, so good luck on that. When is your next race?
Thank you for having me, and thank you. My next race is down at Dover.
You're going to be at Dover this weekend. Awesome. We'll look forward to seeing you there.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good night now.
Bye.
All right. That is Sean Hingorani, the first of Indian descent. I don't know where I got Native American, but of Indian descent. And it's really cool to see him doing so well with Venturini Motorsports. But we have to move on now, Sal, to the ARCA West Series. We covered part of it talking to the race winner here. But the I tell you what, Landon Lewis ended up third in this race. And he's got to be wondering, what does he have to do to get a win? Because right now he's going to have to get through Sean Hingorani if he's going to get a win in this race. He ended up finishing second. But
yeah,
he was the driver to beat for most of the race.
Yeah, all of them are thinking the same thing. Even Trevor, I talked to Trevor a little bit after the race, and he said the same thing. He goes, man, he goes, we got to get through Sean to And he said, when I got to the back, I just wanted to let him know I was there and see if I could just, if he would just move a little bit. He goes, I didn't want to drive through him.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I just wanted to just to touch him, you know, and just, you know, let him know I'm there. He goes, and he didn't move. He said he moved up the track a tad and gathered it. He goes, I was going to go for it when, but it was too late. He goes, there was no way I was going to wreck him. He goes, now, had it been Todd Sousa, had it been Todd Sousa or one of the other drivers, Sally, I know, you'd have, or Jeremy Doss, he goes, I would have drove right through him. He goes, I would have made sure that they're up in the wall, hard in the wall.
Well, this is the second race in a row that Landon has finished second. Trevor actually ended up in third. Then it was Tanner Reif in fourth and Bradley Erickson rounding out the top five. Then Tyler Reif ended up in sixth, followed by Jake Bowman, Ethan Nascimento, Todd Sousa, and Nick Joannides rounded out the top 10.
Yeah, that was a good finish for Nick. Nick Joannides. We've had him on the show before. He's an old school guy, cheering for Miami from way back in, gosh, way before our days.
But it
was good
to see him still racing.
Yeah, you know, and they're like one of the lower funded teams. You know, they're not like the Venturinis or the Phil McAnally's or even when Bob Riccardi was here, like the Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was really neat to see they're happy. You would have thought they had a win.
Yes, yes. So it was very, very cool. To see all of these guys finish in the top 10. Do you want to go ahead and cover the point standings, Sal?
Yeah, you're not going to believe the point standings.
I know. I saw it this morning, and I couldn't believe it. I was wondering if it's messed up here.
No. These are true. These are true because I went back and I checked the points. You got to remember the first race out at Phoenix. He didn't have a good run. So, anyways, we got Landon Lewis leading the points. And then from there, then we go to Tyler Reif, who had the one win at Phoenix. And you got to remember, he got a lot of points because it was they have more cars. So depending on the cars, that's how that's how the points.
So that's what happened.
I'm thinking that's how the East, because remember the East, they've had a couple, the last race, they only had, 10, 12 cars?
Right.
So they didn't really get that many points, so I'm thinking that's why I started doing the math on it. Yeah, so anyways, I'm on top of that. So then we got Sean and Hingarani in third place with two wins, and then Trevor Huddleston in fourth with zero wins. Bradley Erickson, I'm gonna get this kid on. This kid is amazing. You will love this kid. Bradley is him and his family are really great. Yeah, I feel so bad. He's had so many second place finishes, and throughout the series, this is SRL included. But he's ready to pop. He's ready for a win, whether it be here or in the SRL series. And then Tanner Reif, who we had on the show last year.
Yeah.
He's a one and only Bill McAnally Racing driver. I talked to Bill about the team, so if we have time, I'll fill you in on what Bill told me. And then seventh is Kyle Keller, who's from Vegas. Eighth is Todd Sousa. Ninth is Takuma Koga, who's having another great season in the top 10. And then 10th is David Smith, who his car blew up right when he got out.
Lord.
So right by where I was. All of a sudden, boom, I see an explosion. I was like, what the heck? I thought it was a fireworks show. And so, anyways, that's the top 10. So we got two full-time drivers that come from out of state. David comes from Canada, and Takuma still flies in from Japan.
He does. I really admire him.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to have to try to get Takuma on the show one of these days. I love saying his name, Takuma Koga.
Yeah, we'll get him on. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do that. He talks good English to a point, but he has one of the guys on his team who talks really good English.
Oh, okay.
And he's also from Japan. So I'm trying to figure out how we can do this to where we can get them.
I think I talked to him before when he raced in the Arkham Menards series at Iowa Speedway. But it's been a while, and we haven't had him on the show. But I talked with their owner, too. His name's escaping me all of a sudden. Hattori.
Back then it was Joe Nava was his owner. Takuma's owner was Joe Nava. Yeah.
Okay, well, Shiggy Hattori talked to.
Yeah, but now he's racing for Jefferson Pitts. But yeah, he's running with Joe Nava. He was running for Joe Nava back then. Then now he's running for Jefferson Pitts. But he always takes us. Well, I talked to Bill and he's excited about what's going on with the truck program right now. Of course, who wouldn't be? You know, he's got Chris Inecki's, who's already won races, and he's got Jake Garcia, who's about ready, another one's about ready. And I asked Bill, I go, what's going on with the West team? It seems like, you really, not really, you only got one car. And he just feels that the West just isn't where, right now, where he should invest his money, because he says the trucks are really expensive to run. He says, and now that I got two good drivers, he goes, I like the direction.
Yeah, it's a reallocation of resources now.
Exactly. And he says, and I like the direction we're taking. I go, the direction you guys are taking is awesome. I said, Christian has always been a good wheel man. I said, and Jake Garcia, I followed him for a long time. And Jake is Jake's thing is he's never run these tracks before. Christian has. So when they got Christian is helping Jake come through the ranks right now. So Christian is basically Jake's driver coach.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So he's kind of the driver coach. But as far as the future of Bill McAnally Racing in the West Series, I really don't know. You know what?
I'll tell you what, we've got East drivers driving for West Coast teams, and we've got West Coast drivers driving for East Coast teams.
Exactly.
So what's going on here, Sal?
Oh, I know. And then you got Tacoma, who comes from Japan for the past. He's got over 100 starts. He has over 100 starts in the NASCAR East, in the NASCAR West Series. Over 100 starts.
Wow,
that's
amazing. We have got to get him on.
Over 100 starts. I know.
We need to do a feature article on Tacoma Koga.
I'm trying to find a way to get him. But we're gonna have to get an interpreter.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to get one of his guys, to interpret for us.
We'll have to see if we can work that out. So I'm excited about Tacoma being in the top 10 again this season, and definitely looking forward to seeing what happens for the rest of the season with Sean Hingarani and Landon Lewis. We've got to try to get Landon on the show too. Remember, it used to be Cameron Haley who was the number two guy
time. And every time I talk to Landon, and I just got to get hold of Candace Hornaday, which is Ron Hornaday's daughter. She's
mm-hmm.
the one. She's the one that's running for Landon. And she wasn't there this week. She was in Europe this weekend. And Landon says, he goes, I want to come on. I go, I know, Landon. I go, let me get a hold of Candace. I go,
okay.
But she's in Europe. In the next couple weeks. I'll just call her, because she's always telling me, Sal, when do you want him? And I says, I want to get him after a race. But mm-hmm. I said, she's in Europe right now, so within the next week or two. Then he was up in at the Legend Nationals in between, so it was hard to get him because when they race the Legend Nationals, they race during the week.
Right. Okay, well, I'm glad to know he wants to come on.
He does. He's been bugging me. He's been saying, and I'm like, Landon, I know, man. I said, you know what?
And an update on our, remember Jason Schultz, Sal?
Yeah.
Jason Schultz was a producer for the Dale Jr. Download for quite a while, and recently he just made a change. He's now working over at Trackhouse Racing with the social media lead. So I'm pretty excited for Jason Schultz. I'm trying to see if we can get him back on the show.
Well, there's a kid over here. They used to work at Irwindale on a car, and now all of a sudden I find out that he's one of the engineers at Penske. He's working on Brian Blaney's car.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I just found out 2 weeks ago that Nevada Chauvin is working for as an engineer with Penske.
Yeah. See if you can get him to come on the show. Have a different perspective here.
Yeah. Well, that's like Leighton Sibley, remember?
Mm-hmm.
We had Leighton on from he was with I forget who he's with, but now he's with Jimmy Johnson's group.
Legacy Motor Club.
Legacy, yeah. Yeah, he moved over there, but Leighton started out over here as nothing. He wasn't doing nothing. He was just over here as a fan.
Yeah.
And also he gets a PR job. Yeah.
I always tell him he got his start at Fanfare Racing Radio.
Nobody ever remembers us.
Well, I met him at Chicagoland Speedway. He gave me a big hug and said, "You'd be surprised how much I learned from being on the radio show. It's amazing."
Oh, I know. I get a lot of it. I mean, we talk a lot. I talk a lot of the drivers. They enjoy it. Like Sean. His dad, is just, JD is just ecstatic. Troy, his PR guy and stuff like that. But other than
well, we're going to have to sign off, Sal.
Yeah, we're going to. Oh, I'm tired. It was a long weekend. So I'll be off this weekend. I'll be off the next weekend. I'll be off the next 2 weeks. I told you earlier, I'm not going to be at no tracks. I gotta take a hiatus.
Yeah, you're going to take a break here.
I need to gather my marbles and gather my thoughts, and I got to think about my health. I'm not a young man anymore.
Okay. Yes, we don't want you in the hospital again.
No, shut. No, I don't like looking at hospitals. But anyways, you guys have a good show. Thanks again, and we'll talk to everybody next week. And other than that, have a good evening, and stay safe this weekend, and enjoy your families. All right. Good night.
Okay, we'll do. And you get some rest, Sal. Thanks for everything.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. We're actually a minute past the top of the hour, but it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. Sal and I doing some catching up there on some things. And let's welcome our group here to the show. We're going to start. Let's start with Andy Alasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you, Sharon. Good to be on tonight, as always. How you doing?
Doing well. I was telling Sal, I'm sure you'll remember Jason Schultz. Remember Jason Schultz?
Yeah.
He was the one of the producers on the Dale Jr. Download for quite a few years, and now he's over at Trackhouse Racing. So I'm pretty excited for him.
Yeah, Fan for Racing alumni that's done really well. Jason's kind of made a name for himself in racing, and it's fun to see his progression for sure.
Yep, I'm super, really excited for him. We have on the show here Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Pleasure to be here tonight. And I kind of feel how Andy and Mike feel now. I didn't get to be on the show Thursday, so it's been a whole week, and I feel lost. Like, I haven't talked to you guys in forever, so I'm glad to be back on tonight.
Well, we're glad to have you here, Jay. And then also we have Michael Orzel on the show here.
Hi. Good evening. Good to be back.
It's definitely good to have you here. All right, Mike, we're going to start with you for the first hot topic.
Well, kind of rolling in a few of them. Start with some really, really good news. Blaine Perkins was involved in a very hard crash this weekend at Talladega Saturday during the Xfinity Series race. He was taken to the hospital locally in Birmingham, checked out, and was released Saturday. I think it was either Saturday evening or Sunday morning. So Blaine Perkins checked and released from the hospital. It looks like he's okay. And that kind of leads into the hot topic here. Some very, very hard crashes this weekend at Talladega. We mentioned Blaine Perkins also as part of that same incident. Dexter Stacy hit the inside wall extremely hard. He was okay. But probably the biggest impact of the weekend was at the end of the NASCAR Cup Series race. Ryan Preece came up and hit Kyle Larson as Larson was spinning and crossing back across the track. Preece hit Larson so hard that it caved in the passenger side door. If it was a passenger car, that would be where the passenger door is, caved in the roll cage there, and both drivers were checked and released from the infield care center. They're okay, but NASCAR initially took the number 5 car of Kyle Larson to the R&D center for analysis, and now today we got word that they also requested and Stewart Haas Racing gave them the Ryan Preece car from that incident, assuming to research and make sure that the car performed the way they expected and make any improvements necessary to make them safer in the future.
Okay. So that's one big topic there, Jay. Do you want to go ahead and start?
Well, it is Talladega, and we tend to see a certain amount of wrecks for sure. It's been a while, I think, since we've seen the barrel roll like we saw with Blaine Perkins. Honestly, of the ones that we saw come out of that, I really thought Stacy's hit was the hardest with how he hit pit wall. It's the extension, and fortunately, they now have the safer barriers there. But the extension where it is angled outward a little bit so that the safety vehicles can park behind that and make a quick exit out onto the track and go either direction they need. So that, to me, actually appeared to be the hardest hit, if you will. But Blaine Perkins, it's good to hear that he's okay. and been released. I know they said when they checked him, it was a precautionary thing that they took him to the local medical facility, and he stayed there for observation. When it comes to the cup side, another very unique one, we hadn't seen that of it tearing into a car, and I think that's why they requested the Ryan Preece car, was to see if they can determine the type of contact that was made and how it dug into the side of another car. And I believe it was Dave Moody that had tweeted talking about how the reinforcement is heavier on the driver's side, obviously, to protect the driver, that they may have to look at that as far as the reinforcement bars and padding that they have on the passenger side, if you will, as Mike said, the passenger side door on a normal car. Because, yeah, we hadn't seen something like that. Not like that, anyway. So something that they want to look at of how Preece's car looked, in, like I said, of the, whether it be the splitter or something, I'm not sure what exactly dug into it like that. Might be one of those of, as we've seen with walls, when they hit the wall, just a freak accident. You don't think there's any way it can happen, but they tend to find that way. It manages to happen somehow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Andy?
Yeah, we saw some, obviously, some pretty tough wrecks this weekend. Talladega has been known to produce, you know, big crashes like that, but seems like this past weekend we saw some really, really hard hits for sure. You know, the 66 Xfinity car hit really hard, as we saw, and then the Blaine Perkins crash, one of the more violent wrecks, I think, that, you know, I can remember, at least in recent years. That car actually had the roof ground down to where it developed a hole in the roof and the windshield, and that was from grinding into the track. So certainly a violent hit there. I believe Blaine was kept at least a night or two in the hospital. Thankfully has been since released. But I think the craziest wreck of the weekend would have to be the Ryan Preece Kyle Larson wreck, because I've never seen a frame come apart like that inside of a car, at least not to my knowledge, and that's, you know, the last 22 years of watching the sport. So obviously a violent wreck, and something catastrophically broke in the right side of the car, and we've seen some violent impacts like that in the past. So yeah, obviously it's a good thing that both the 5 and the 41 will go back to the R&D center so that they can learn and try to improve upon frame construction possibly, because to my knowledge, that's not something we ever saw with the older cars. So, you know, it's obviously the result of a really, really hard impact, a freak impact, if you will, but just have to be thankful that that wasn't a driver's side impact. What comes to mind for me, something that would closely relate to that would be, if you guys remember the Steve Park Busch Series accident at Darlington in 2001 that really shaped the rest of his career, a violent driver's side impact. And I can only think that, you know, had that been a driver's side impact for Larson, that we would not have been seeing him do a post-race interview. So thankfully, not hurt in that accident, could have been a lot worse. Thankful that nobody was seriously injured this weekend, but yeah, some just violent wrecks that really hopefully can be learned from to make these cars even safer. And obviously that's the goal for NASCAR, and we've seen a huge evolution in safety over the last 20 or so years, and it'll only continue to get better. And thankfully, you know, if there is a good outcome from these accidents, it's that NASCAR can learn from them and make things better moving forward.
Okay. With regard to Blaine Perkins' accident, yeah, it's one of those accidents that you hold your breath until it's all over and you see him get out of the car. Blaine is one of those drivers that we followed his career from very early on. And Sal did mention tonight that he had a chance to text with him. And Blaine says he's doing okay at this point. He's ready to get back in the car, but it's still not determined if he's going to be ready to get back in the car for this weekend's race. So we'll have to kind of wait for an announcement there as to whether or not he'll be racing or when he'll be racing again. But I could kind of tell when he got out of the car, he was stunned. And I was, I really wasn't too surprised when they said that they were taking him off site for further evaluation, because he just did not seem like himself when he got out of that car. And I'm glad that they did what they did to kind of take care of him and look after him after that accident, because that was scary. With regard to the Dexter Stacy, that was another really horrific hit that he took. He was able to get out of the car, and they were able to actually do an interview with him, which, again, I was thanking NASCAR for the safety features that they have inside the car. And then the accident with Ryan Preece and Kyle Larson happened, and the first thing I thought is exactly what you brought up, Andy, and that is he is so lucky that that hit on the passenger side and not the driver's side, because you could see where the roll bar was actually twisted and bent inside that car. So that should not have happened, and I think that's what NASCAR was thinking when they saw the car and said, we need to take this back to the R&D center and figure out what happened here, because we don't want that to happen again. Godfather Moody brought up an excellent point, though, too, Jay, that the strongest reinforcement is those bars that surround the driver. But again, you don't want that thing bending anywhere. So the roll cage bending at all. So that's why NASCAR took it back to the R&D center. I give NASCAR kudos for doing everything they can to investigate it and analyze it and try to come up with a plan for how they can avoid it from happening again. And I think it was just a matter of time before they asked for the Ryan Preece car to also come in, because that's the car that hit him. So they need to analyze, you know, the damage from Ryan's car and how he hit the car and why it literally destroyed the passenger side of that car. So I am just happy that NASCAR did everything they could to make that to try to make improvements to avoid that from happening again, because the last thing, thank God it didn't hit the driver. It's just a really blessed thing that he was not actually hit. But I think it was a blessing in all three accounts that of the accidents that we're highlighting here, that these drivers were not hurt worse. I know they said for Blaine, his eyes were pretty badly bruised. That's part of the injury that he went through. But Mike, what are your thoughts?
So we're kind of talking about three different incidents here, and
yeah,
we've rolled them into one because we're talking about hard hits at Talladega. And to be honest with you, the one that I was surprised with, I was surprised that Blaine Perkins was the one who was the most shaken up out of all of those, because the overarching thing here is about energy dissipation. And the flipping, rolling accidents like what Blaine had are usually, they look dramatic, they look violent, but from a physics standpoint, they're actually less dangerous than a hard impact like what Dexter Stacy or Ryan Preece encountered, because the energy of the race car is able to dissipate more slowly as the car is tumbling. Remember some of the safety discussions we had with regard to the car last year? Now, I think it was Kevin Harvick was talking about where you don't think it's you think it's a bad thing when you see all these parts and pieces flying off the car, but that's actually a good thing, because that's energy being carried away from the car and not being transmitted into the driver, which is why the Dexter Stacy impact on the inside wall looks so much worse, because there was no energy transfer. It was all just an immediate race car into the wall, no other absorption or transfer from there. So glad to see that Blaine's back out of the hospital and he's all right. Dexter Stacy was okay at the racetrack. With regard to the Kyle Larson accident, I don't know. I'm really interested to see what NASCAR says regarding this. I don't know that this is necessarily a failure of the roll cage. It's not necessarily a bad thing that roll cage bends. Obviously, on the driver's side, you're going to have to take a little bit more precaution because the driver sits a little bit more centered into the car than you and I do when we're driving a passenger car, but they are still biased to the left. So they can't build as much give into the roll cage on the left side of the car. But on the right side, they've got a little bit more margin there. And that may be by design. They allow that roll cage to bend when it faces an extremely strong impact like that, again, because it acts as a – We don't think of steel as soft in a cushion, but in this case, when you're talking about 3,400-pound race cars hitting each other at 150, 180 miles an hour, that steel, as it bends, it becomes a cushion, and it soaks up that energy from the other race car there. So that may have been a design feature when they were building that car for if these guys take a really hard hit on the passenger side, we've got 18 inches, 2 feet, whatever the distance is here, that we can build in a little bit of deformity in this metal here so the metal can bend and it can absorb that energy and it doesn't get transferred into the driver. Remember the discussion from last year, the big problem with the rear end on the race car was it was too stiff. It wasn't bending. It wasn't absorbing the energy from impacts, and as a result, that energy was going into the driver. So good to see that Kyle Larson is okay. I'm, like I said, very, very interested to see what the results from the R&D center are here, but I wouldn't be so quick to say, hey, this is a failure of the car, and if it had been on the driver's side, Kyle would have been killed because the car would have failed in the same way. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Before we start getting all too wound up about, hey, this car is dangerous, the only reason Kyle Larson's alive is because he took the shot in the driver's – in the passenger's door instead of the driver's door. I don't think that's necessarily correct, and I would want to hear word from NASCAR one way or the other whether this was actually a failure of the race car or if the race car performed more or less as designed, because remember, Kyle Larson and Ryan Preece both walked away from that accident, which is a very, very good thing.
Yes, it is. Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, and I just added that the tweet from Dave Moody. He says it's 4 times heavier or stiffer enforced on the driver's side. Hopefully we don't have to compare that directly with another incident like this. But I think it's good NASCAR is still looking into it. And as we mentioned, of taking the Ryan Preece car to see if there was something specific there, maybe the stiffness of the nose, the redesign of the nose the way it is this year, of what caused that we've even seen something like this that we haven't seen in prior years. Overall, we all mentioned it. Yes, Blaine Perkins did spend a little bit of time in the hospital for observation, and hopefully he'll be cleared to race this weekend. All the others were cleared at the medical center there at the track. That shows the improvement in safety that we've seen in years past. Talking about the Dexter safety one, the safer barrier. If you watch that video, watch a shot like that where you can see what that safer barrier does. As Mike said, it's the dissipating of energy. It doesn't come to a complete stop as that wall, the safer barrier, gives. And that one being open from the see it very visibly, the wave that the wall gives. I mean, I think that's one of the hugest innovations that we've seen as far as NASCAR safety. But they're not stopping. They're bringing both these cars to the R&D to see what they can do. Like Mike said, it might be that was the car was designed to give a little bit more on that side, but how much do they want it to give as far as it getting into the other car then? So we'll have to see what they determine from it, but I commend NASCAR for the job they're doing and trying to improve and make sure it's not any worse.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with something that Mike brought up in regards to the roll cage of Larson's car. You know, it is a good point to think that, you know, maybe that is by design that it would bend, you know, and break, in which it would absorb the energy from the impact. So that is a good thing. Certainly, you know, more of the energy that's going into the car components versus the driver is what saves lives. And so certainly the car did its job. Kyle Larson walked out, released from the care center, giving an interview a mere minutes later. So certainly everything did its job as designed. But I just found it to be surprising just from the standpoint of I'm not sure that I've ever seen this a chassis component break like that before. So it would be interesting to hear the findings from NASCAR down the road if they ever discuss it in the future, to see why that broke and if there's anything that can be done moving forward. But, you know, it is a really good point that it was probably broken from the energy absorption from the crash. But, yeah, nonetheless, at the end of the day, everyone released from either the care center or the hospital. And, you know, that's the big takeaway from all the incidents that we saw this weekend, which just in my mind, just some of the more violent wrecks we've seen at Talladega, in at least in recent times.
Yeah, I agree. It might be exactly as Mike said, and, you know, it might be a good thing that it did bend. But I do applaud NASCAR for taking the time to look into it and analyze it, and maybe it bent more than they expected it to in that situation. I don't know. But NASCAR has said that they want to be more transparent about these kinds of things, so I'm hoping that they do come out and kind of give us the word on what happened here, and we'll have a better understanding of whether that was supposed to happen or not. But I do thank Mike for bringing it up, because it certainly is a possibility. All of those wrecks had their own moments of being kind of scary. We were very happy to see the drivers step away from their cars in all three of these cases, or four if you count the fact that there were two cars involved in that last incident. You know, NASCAR is this is just an example of NASCAR constantly looking for what they can do to improve, and that it also reinforces the statement that we've made here numerous times, and that is that NASCAR is ever evolving. They never will achieve that perfect place, or, you know, where things are just absolutely perfect. There's always going to be something that for them to look into, something that they can improve upon and do better. And that's what this is, an example of them looking at what they can improve upon and what they can do better. So kudos to NASCAR for that. And, again, we're thanking the Lord that all of these guys were able to walk away and are safe. So, Mike, you get the last word here.
Really nothing more to add. Like you said, the increased transparency that NASCAR has been pushing for hopefully means that we're going to get some more detailed answers. You know, I'm kind of a technical guy, so I would love to see a breakdown and analysis of exactly what happened, whether it was designed to happen like that, or what changes they're going to make. I would dig right into that, and I really hope they do come out with something kind of in the weeds and let guys like me dig into it and learn something from it.
Well, I hope they don't get too technical, because I want to understand what it is they're talking about. Okay. Let's go ahead and move to Jay now for the next topic.
Well, I'm with you, Sharon. I hope they don't be too technical with it so that all race fans can understand it. I'm sure Larry McReynolds will do a good job of breaking it down. He always does, but... I put up one, I know it was right as the show started. I think it was Bob Pockris, maybe. No, well, it came out, I got it off JST, but we only have 36 entries, Cup Series entries for Dover, which is a relatively close track to most of the race teams. We have more than that travel to California. I'm a little bit concerned here with this.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts about 36 entries on for the Dover, is that the Cup race?
Yes, for the Cup race.
Yeah, so this is interesting, and we have seen this a couple times this year where only the chartered teams make the trip to a particular Cup Series race, and that would be the case at Dover this weekend. It seems as if the open teams are simply picking and choosing which races to run, and I suspect a lot of that is driven by the purses available, which would be the bigger races like your Daytona 500, Coke 600, Southern 500, amongst others. And so Dover just isn't really on that list. Dover is just the Plain Jane Cup race, and, you know, there's probably not a lot of incentive for an open team to show up. So it seems like it seems like the only real incentive for, you know, a full-time entry to show up is to be a chartered team, which right now it's only the 36 chartered teams that show up. So, unfortunately, we're going to see this probably periodically this year. Would I like to see more teams involved? Yeah, absolutely. I think the more the better. When, you know, you look at the Daytona 500 where we had 40-something entries, knowing that some were going to go home, that reminds me of, you know, 20 years ago, and certainly we don't see that as much these days. So it's always nice to see more participants try to make the field of a Cup Series race, or any NASCAR race for that matter. But I think that the way that these teams are compensated, it benefits the charter teams, and there's only 36 of them. So unfortunately, we're simply going to, at times, only see the charter teams show up, and Dover fits the bill this weekend.
Okay, Mike.
You want to make your announcement, or you want me to start off here first?
Are we there already? Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Okay. We are at that time of the show where I do an announcement for our first-time listeners, and thank you, Mike, for pointing that out. I just want to let our first-time listeners know that we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we are going to continue to record the rest of our conversation. So that means you're going to hear us go off the air kind of mid-sentence and then in the middle of a conversation. So just know that we are recording so that material will be available as part of our bonus overtime material on our – what I do is I go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, we have a player over at fanforracing.com, and you can just go fast forward to the two-hour mark in order to hear the rest of the conversation. So, again, we didn't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know how they can hear the rest of our conversation when we go off air mid-sentence. So, Pat, Mike, let's go ahead and hear your thoughts.
All right. Andy kind of touched on it a little bit, but this is the ugly side of the charter system that NASCAR instituted about 10 years ago. They created this have and have not system with these charters. And on the upshot, you've got much more stability for the long-term team owners. They like it because they have a guaranteed revenue stream. That charter has its own value. We've seen them selling for $10 million or more just for the charter. So there is a lot of value added with the charter system. However, the other side of that coin is this, where we're going to have only the charter teams show up to some of these races. Racing's expensive. Cup racing in particular is extremely expensive. I don't know that the Gen 7 car has delivered on the cost savings that were a goal for that car. I know last year a lot of team owners were explicitly saying it has not delivered on those cost savings. However, the intention was as the stockpile of parts gets built up, the cost goes down, and these teams are able to not spend as much money on the Gen 7 car in the long run. I'm not sure if that's materialized or not, but bottom line is, if I'm running a open team, step one, I got to get a car. If I don't already have one that I'm sitting on, I got to find one, and they're not cheap. And oh, by the way, sponsorship money is almost all dried up as well. And since I don't have a charter, I've got no revenue stream from NASCAR. So I've got to do this whole thing out of pocket, cough up. The number Corey LaJoy cited for the cost of a Gen 7 Cup car is about $300,000 just to get it sitting on four wheels. So I've got to cough up $300,000 just to come up with a Cup car to go race at a pick a date, Dover. I got to go cough up all that kind of money to go race. And I'm still not going to make as much money as a charter team. Even if I win the race, I might not make as much as a charter team who finishes 10th or 15th because I don't get that revenue share cut because I don't have a charter. So the charter system in one hand has been very good and encouraging for long-term stable teams, but at the same time, I can't help but think it's had a little bit of a discouraging effect from the teams that are on the outside looking in or potentially wanting to get into the Cup Series. Dale Jr., for example, has cited the cost of the charter as a big reason why he has not expanded JRM into the Cup Series. And I'm sure there's plenty of other potential owners out there who have looked at just the cost of a charter and decided that maybe NASCAR racing isn't for them, especially not in the current economic climate.
Yeah, I think both of you guys have kind of hit it on the head. As much as NASCAR is seeking parity, the charters system still makes it a little tough for some of these underfunded teams to be able to make the show. And part of it is risk versus reward as well. When you think about you're bringing a car, you've got to pay for hotel rooms, you've got to bring, you know, everything you need for the car. And it's not just hotel rooms for the driver, it's hotel rooms for your crew members and everybody else that supports the team. So it really is tough on these teams, and they have to make a choice. They have to make a business choice for their business and what makes sense for them. And you're right about the sponsorship, too. When you're short on sponsorship for a full season, you got to pick and choose which races can you go to. Dover is a good track, but it's not a Talladega-type track where you're running a you have a high likelihood of damaging your car, but you can get a car damaged going to a track like Dover as well. So in addition to the expense of hotel rooms, the expense of the car, the expense of, you know, travel, and everything that goes into that, it just makes more sense for some of these teams to sit this one out, if you will. Do we want to see more cars off the track? We want to see a full field in the field, but sometimes times are tight, and this is one of those situations where times are tight for a lot of these teams, and they've got to make those tough decisions. Hopefully, NASCAR. I know that they're reviewing that. They're looking at the charter teams and what they can do. You know that we know that the teams and NASCAR management have regular meetings where they sit and talk about these kinds of things. There's been a little bit of a hang-up there that I hope that they are going to get resolved, and because I know there was recent talk about how some of the teams did not show up, or maybe all of the teams, I don't know, didn't show up for a meeting with NASCAR at some point. And a lot of people said that compensation is one of those reasons. So we'll have to look and see how it continues to progress. I know NASCAR wants to do their part to make it equitable for all the teams, but it's going to be a tough nut to crack. So we'll see how this continues to evolve. Next up is Jay.
Well, I feel like I've been on this soapbox for a while. I don't know how long the charter team has been in place, but prior to that, they also had the top 35 in points locked in. First five races was from the previous year. The following year, once they got past the fifth race, they went by the current year. There are some great benefits. As you all mentioned, the value of when a team owner decides to get out, such as Chip Ganassi, sold that charter and that team, it was better to buy the whole team and the two charters than just one charter by itself for Trackhouse Racing. So that is a good thing. Understand the pay distribution throughout the field. If you're a charter team, you get a little bit more. I don't know, as far as, like Mike said, of winning the race, if you're getting more than second place on down, but there is some distribution there. What I think they need to do, though, is look at opening it up. You can race your way in as a non-charter team, qualify and race your way in. If a charter team doesn't qualify, they may get some compensation just for being at the track, whereas maybe an open team wouldn't. Again, add that to the list of benefits from that side. But clearly this has been a deterrent from open teams, multiple open teams, other than a few exceptional races, such as the Daytona 500, even showing up and attempting to make the show. And that's where I have the concern. As I said, with at the Talladega Short Track, I believe they had 63 late models, somewhere in that neighborhood, for 24, 28 starting spots. You get the best of the best at that point. I understand, still giving provisional some exception to a series regular, whatever it be, but not as a whole. Everybody is racing for one of those 28 starting spots, not that. I think they need to look at that and find a balance. I'm not saying they need to go away with the charter system, but find a balance to make it more encouraging. And on the second go-round here, I'll talk about why Dover, I guess, would be my question. But I'll hit that on the second time round here.
Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, I look at the, you know, the reasoning possibly of why, you know, this particular weekend we only see chartered teams versus, you know, not seeing more people show up to the racetrack. A lot of it, I think, has to do with just the money involved, and it's already been alluded to by some of you, but the cost, I think, is the big problem. And, you know, you've got to make it financially reasonable for someone to show up with a cup car. If it's not going to make money, there's no point in doing it. And I think, unfortunately, unless you're a chartered team right now, you're not in a financial position to make it worth your while. So until we can make this worth more than just 36 teams as wild, and, you know, I think this is the dilemma we find ourselves in. You know, and there was a time when there were far more car owners and far more people showing up to the racetrack each week, and I'd love to see it get back to that point, but unfortunately right now, unless you're a chartered cup team, it's probably only makes sense a few times a year to show up with an extra car.
Okay. Jay. I'm sorry, Mike.
You mean Mike? Yeah.
I mean Mike.
Andy nailed it. Yeah, Andy nailed it. It's about making money. Cup racing, no one goes cup racing because it's fun. People go cup racing because there's big money in cup racing. If you want to have fun racing cars, there's a whole lot of different levels that you can go race cars and have fun and not spend nearly as much money as you spend going cup racing. So for our team to want to show up to a cup race, step one, they have to be able to make a good business case that they're not going to absolutely lose their shirt by trying to show up at a cup race. And like I said in my first reply, with the current sponsorship environment, the current revenue sharing arrangement that NASCAR has, it's a very, very difficult case for somebody on the outside looking in at this charter system to make a good, strong business case of, yes, I can put a car together, I can travel to wherever this race is, I can put everybody I need to in a hotel room, I can feed them, you know, all the associated expenses that Sharon laid out, and I could still at least break even at worst and maybe make money if we do okay. That it's difficult to make that financial case right now. So how do you improve it? Jay had a couple ideas there. Again, it's tied to the sponsorship money. Part of the reason that the charter system came around is because sponsorships were starting to dry up when the system was developed. Obviously, it's gotten a lot drier since then, and NASCAR was cutting up the TV money in order to give a little bit more financial stability to the charter teams. Now that sponsorship's even tighter, we see the teams are pushing back of, we want a bigger cut of the guaranteed TV money, so we don't need to go and get additional sponsorship. Well, where did that first big cut of sponsorship of charter money come from? Well, it used to be paid out as part of the purses for the race. So now the purses for the individual race, the money you could potentially win by showing up and doing well, that has gotten cut down in order to feed these charter teams. So there's another loss of incentive for non-charter or open teams to show up to the racetrack. How do you improve it without getting more sponsorship or additional revenue streams? That's a tough one right there. I think that this problem is going to probably get worse before it gets better, and it's really going to come down to whatever deal that NASCAR can strike between the team owners and whatever the follow-on TV contract is going forward after the 2024 season. I think that is their opportunity to improve this system and hopefully start seeing more teams show up to the racetrack because they think they can actually have a good go at it, be successful, make a little bit of money in the process, and maybe, if there's room afterwards, maybe have a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I think you guys have all expertly outlined exactly why this is going to be such a tough nut to crack. I won't steal Jay's thunder about why Dover, but I have some ideas, and he and I usually think along the same lines. So I'll let him kind of outline why he thinks it's Dover in this particular case. Jay?
Well, a couple of things changed there. As Mike was talking, I don't know the purses for each of these races. I know NASCAR quit publishing that. Maybe some of those are, even on the West Coast, a little bit higher purses due to the market. Once you get to picking and choosing, or maybe they did start the season with the intent to run all the races. They've gotten to the point where they can't. Coming out of Talladega, obviously, we talked about there were some wrecks and cars involved that they don't have the car available to. Dover itself can be one that Miles the Monster tends to eat them up. The more I thought about it, but something else Mike said was the parity with the next-gen car. And the cost of that, I think, is going to take a couple of years. You know, the initial changeover still cost you. We'll see that catch up. But Dover is one of those tracks, and we've seen it when you look at the list of winners. Jimmy Johnson specifically comes to mind. That Talladega is an open. You've seen it. We've seen it. And whether you get a top 10 finish or win the race, kind of opens itself up to anybody can win it. Dover is one of those of you got to know the track, you got to run well at the track. So I can see where that might come in play of they don't feel they have the Dover setup to even run with the guys to get a good finish. So there are some things that I see. My initial thought, like I said, just a closer race. We saw it earlier. This is the first year in a long time that I can remember it being down to the actual 36 Chargers. I think we've seen 37, 38 being fairly regular. Other than Daytona, I can't remember the race where we actually had more than 40 and somebody had to go home. You know, back in the early part of this, we used to see it. ARCA teams or Xfinity teams would get a car just because there were open spots that they knew they could fill in, show up, make a couple laps, pull off the track, collect the last place finish money. And I know we weren't a fan of that, but I'm also not a fan of there not even being teams willing to commit to try and make the show for whatever the reason. I think it's something that NASCAR needs to look at.
Okay, Andy, it's your turn to bring up our next topic.
All right, looking at the fact that possible changes coming to the short track package in the Cup Series, and I actually just read a few minutes ago the possibility of them changing tire compounds to try to assist in making that package better.
Okay. Mike, you're first up here.
I'd heard about the short track package changes. In fact, I think I might have been the guy who posted it up in our group. I had not heard anything about tire compound, but I'm very interested to hear more. The aerodynamics at a short track, they matter, but they don't matter that much. It's not like a place like Talladega or Michigan where a little bit of tape across the spoiler is going to have a major aerodynamic advantage, like what was the 24 team at the time with Chase Elliott. They got busted on TV peeling a piece of tape off of the spoiler. I think it was at Chicagoland, because that little bit of aerodynamic makes such a big difference in a place like that. Short tracks aren't like that. You can take big wholesale changes with the aerodynamics, either by design or by hitting a fence. There's a lot of aerodynamic modifications that happen at places like short tracks, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference in terms of how the car performs, but tire compound certainly does. If you put more grip into the tires, you could potentially see better cornering, better handling, and potentially more passing. Or
Maybe they want to go in the other direction, kind of like what we talked about a couple months ago with the grooved tires. Reduce the grip. Make the tires less grippy. Make the car handle worse. Make it slide more. Make it harder to control. That might, for lack of a better way to describe it, it might put the race more into the driver's hands and give the guy who's best able to handle a bad-handling race car, give them that advantage. That might be more entertaining because the first few short track races we've seen so far this year have been, to put it diplomatically, lackluster. So hopefully they are getting serious about doing something to improve the short track racing, whether it's an aerodynamic change or a tire compound change. Hopefully they do make some changes before we get back into the short tracks later this summer.
Okay, Jay.
Well, this is one where I think we range from ideas here. I haven't found the short track racing to be, I think Clint Boyer put it as sucks. Mike just said lackluster. I haven't found it to be that. However, again, NASCAR is always looking to improve, which I applaud. One of the things I look at it from the aspect of they have the box so tight and narrow now. I'm not for the taking away all rules and having it an outlaw class run what you want. However, widen the box a little bit and give these crew chiefs and engineers a little bit of playroom where they can try to find an advantage within the rules without having to push it all the way to the envelope. Excuse me. So I know they've tried different things with the engine package, the spoiler package. Now they're looking at tires. If that works, I'm all for it. But I think they need to look at that of like I said, of loosening the reins a little bit on the crew chiefs and engineers.
Okay. Mike, apparently NASCAR had what they called a productive discussion with the Cup Series drivers over the weekend at Talladega to guide some of the changes, of course, their whole package. So some of those drivers said that they saw no difference in the racing at Martinsville 2 weeks ago with the new package, or in some instances they thought it was even worse than last year. So Denny Hamlin walked away from that meeting saying he felt very optimistic. NASCAR officials and representatives from Goodyear discussed several options that they could offer to try to improve the racing product. And Denny Hamlin and those guys, some other folks left the meeting feeling optimistic about some of the changes that they were considering. So that's where the compound tire changes came into play, as a possibility of where they might make changes to the program. And that's fine with me. I kind of am in the same camp as Jay. I really didn't think the racing was so terribly bad. We did see some drivers that were able to pass. I really think it comes down to we've got drivers that are not used to the parity of the race cars, and they want to be able to have that extra oomph, if you will, to be able to pass the cars that are kind of in their way when they want to try to get to the front. Some drivers are finding a way around those cars. Some drivers are not, and those are the drivers that are frustrated with the existing package. Again, I do applaud NASCAR and Goodyear for putting their heads together and coming up with some ideas in order to improve upon the racing. I like that they're always looking for a way to improve. And I think this is a reasonable way to maybe do that, to where the drivers are going to feel more comfortable in that car. But again, we're talking parity, so it makes me wonder if you have parity now and you make the same changes for all of the cars, you still have parity, and it's still going to be hard to pass those cars that are in the same equipment that you have, and their car can run as well as your car is running. So at some point, these drivers have to accept the fact that there is parity and that every driver has a right to be on that track, even if they are holding you up. And Bill France Jr. was right. The fans are paying to watch you pass those cars and figure out a way for you to pass those cars. So I get where the frustration is coming from. I get why drivers, and drivers, by the way, are always going to want something better to help them pass. that's going to be an eternal wish list for drivers. So it puts NASCAR kind of in a tough spot, but I do think that they're coming up with an idea. But I don't know that it's going to be the solution because you're still going to have parity. Andy.
Yeah, so I look at Martinsville specifically, and I know we talked about this after the race a week or so ago. I guess it would be a week ago tonight. You hit on a really good point, both you, Sharon, and Jay, about the fact that the cars have never been more equal than they are today, right? Therefore, because everyone's going practically the same speed, in theory, it makes passing more difficult. So I don't know that you're going to fully fix that. However, one of the issues I did see from the Martinsville race, and I think I talked about it a week ago, was that the tires didn't seem to matter very much. And I think that's the direction that maybe they're looking at as a direction to move in following the Martinsville race, is that you could take no tires, two tires, or four tires, and if you got the lead, you could have someone, you could, for instance, stay out with no tires, run 20 laps, stay out on no tires, have someone directly behind you with four tires, and they couldn't pass you. So, and I would agree, there was some passing, but tire strategy really, it wasn't there for whatever reason. The fall off, for some reason, didn't seem to make a difference. You could have old tires, two tires, or four tires, and if you had the track position, you could retain it. So from a strategy standpoint, it was good because it was up to the crew chief to decide, should I pit or should I stay out? And ultimately, that's what helped dictate the end of the race. So from that side of things, okay, that was good. But I can see why maybe they're looking at tires as an option to promote passing in the future. Because if you can make tire wear more important, it means that you if you do stay out to get the track position on two tires, you're at risk for being passed by somebody behind you with fresher tires. And that it, obviously a place like Darlington, if you don't take tires, you're in really big trouble. And I think maybe that's what they're going to try to promote at places like Martinsville and some other racetracks where tire wear, as of right now, hasn't been as much of a problem. So I would welcome the idea of being able to change tire compounds and maybe mix things up a little bit to try to help promote passing. Another issue that I saw, you know, with regards to Martinsville specifically was the shifting. And, you know, I think Bob Prochrist or somebody made a point that the shifting has created a lack of passing because you can downshift, gain RPM, and it really, you know, helps the center speed of the race car to try to prevent somebody from behind you and passing you. So there's all these little things right now with this current Cup car that I think have lent itself to, at least at some racetracks, passing being a bit more challenging than we've seen in the past. And so, you know, but you look at the fact that NASCAR and everyone seemingly has a common goal here, teams and the sanctioning body alike, to try to make the racing better. And the Martinsville race, I would agree, it wasn't terrible, but there are some things they can do to maybe make passing more prevalent. And if they can make that better, then I'm all about it.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up?
Well, it's a really tough position to be in, like you guys have said. NASCAR has, they very specifically and very targeted tried to make it more fair and parity between all the different cars. We saw that last year, especially, not so much this year, but absolutely last year, where we had something like 19 different unique winners through the series last year, which is great. It's wonderful to see these other teams, especially teams that don't traditionally win races, have the ability to run up front and win races and get those notoriety and exposures that they haven't been able to get for those years. But the other side of that equation is what Andy talked about, where when all the cars are equal, you're not going to outrun somebody with a faster car because you don't have a faster car. Everyone's the same speed. So it's really hard to – that Bill France quote that you're throwing out, it's really hard to use your faster car to pass somebody when you don't have a faster car. And you know, all you're doing is waiting for somebody to make a mistake and then capitalizing on that mistake. But we're talking about the NASCAR Cup Series here. These guys are really, really good. They don't make a lot of mistakes. So there's not a lot of opportunities for drivers to capitalize. So you can be a very, very good driver and surrounded by drivers who are almost just as good as you and a car that is about the same as what you've got. What are you going to use to pass them besides the bumper? And that's kind of the position that NASCAR is in right now. To Jay's point about loosening up the rule book, I like what you're saying there, but that might work for a little while, but you and I both know what's going to happen is the engineers are going to run through their simulations and their wind tunnels and all their testing, and they're going to maximize right up to the edge of that envelope in every single direction again. They're going to figure out what combination of setup in that looser rule book works to get the absolute maximum out of the car. Every single team will have the same setup and we'll be right back to where we started. With regard to the tire compounds, I think tire fall off is probably more important than the initial grip or not. Kind of like what Andy was saying, where what's the point of changing tires if tires don't make a difference and track position is king? But if you have that strategy, like kind of what we used to have before the Gen 7 car, where you would have that strategy call of, do I give up track position and come in and take tires? Or do I stay out and hope that those guys on tires don't eat me up because they're going to be substantially faster? There are very few tracks that we see now. Martinsville used to be one of them, but it's not anymore, where you are substantially faster with new tires versus old tires. So maybe having a tire with a little bit more fall off, like the rain tires that we had in the Truck Series race at Martinsville, that might be something to look at where there's a little bit more strategy involved. But then again, if you go too far in that direction and the tires fall off substantially, everyone's going to pit every single time to put tires on the car either way. So I trust that they've got some really smart people who are trying to wrap their head around this thing. I hope they come up with a solution because I do love short track racing, and I really don't like that short track racing is kind of in the dumps right now. So I hope they can come up with a solution and we can get back to the excitement that short track racing used to be.
Yeah, I like short track racing as well. And oh, Jay, let me go to you next. I almost skipped you.
Well, I don't have a whole lot to follow up on. You know, I gave my idea, but I got to follow up on what Mike said. Put it in the hands of those that get paid to do that and are definitely looking at it. So whether it be in the tires, the only thing I get concerned about when you go with the tires or the fall off, then the teams are going to try and push it too far, and we have tire blowouts. We've seen that before. So you got to tread carefully, literally with the tread, on losing that. I think there's a couple different options. I know they've already tried the aero package and engine package, so my thought was try something different, I guess is where I was going with that. And lastly to this topic, before I turn it back over to Sharon, I'm just glad to see that Denny Hamlin's voice was heard and that he's on the same page with NASCAR.
Okay. I guess tires seems to me that Goodyear has given the drivers a tire that's too good. And so it doesn't matter if they change them or not. It still works on the track. And now we're saying, let's make the tire a little less good so that we can get that fall off on the tire and, you know, which teams can manage their tires better. But Jay is absolutely right. What you're going to have, and we see this every year, where teams play around with tire pressure. Goodyear gives a recommended air pressure, tire pressure range, and some teams like to try to play with that to give themselves a competitive advantage, and they end up blowing out tires, and then they blame Goodyear for not having a good tire. So I want everybody to remember this conversation when these drivers start blowing the tires that, you know, Goodyear gave them a good tire, and they didn't like it because they couldn't pass cars. So, I don't think it's that they can't pass cars. I think it's the ability is there because we see teams passing cars. So why are some teams able to pass those cars and other teams are not? So I think we need to look at that. What are those teams that are able to pass the cars? What are they doing that the other teams are not doing? Because that is where the difference is. I just think that I'm just afraid that making the change to the tires, it might help. It might help them when they're racing, but we're going to see more flat tires, and we're going to see teams playing with the tire pressure on those tires, and we're going to see blowouts. And, yeah, some driver that you think should have won the race might not win the race because they've messed with the tire pressure, and now he's wrecked his car. So we'll see what happens. Andy?
Yeah, you know, ultimately I'm just hoping that we can see a better racing product. And, you know, I just my solution, honestly, is you should just have half the field go one way, half the field go the other way, and you know, and see how that works out. And maybe that'll make things more
okay,
exciting.
Tony.
but, no, seriously, I like the fact that they're willing and open to try to make changes to make it better. That's a good thing. And you have to applaud NASCAR for listening to the teams and drivers and for being willing to try new things and to try to make it better. They've already tried to make changes, and I'm glad that they'll continue to do so, and that's the big thing.
Poor NASCAR. It seems the more they try to please everybody, the less they please everybody. It just drives me crazy. Anyway, we are at that time that we need to do our round table. We actually have maybe a square table tonight, but a little more round. So, Mike, let's start with you.
Sure, it's going to be Mike underscore Zell, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. Changing gears. I am going back to the Birmingham area this weekend, but I'm changing gears a little bit. I'm going to be going to Barber Motorsports Park, and I'm going to check out the IndyCar race this weekend right next door to Talladega. So if you are in the Birmingham area, go and check it out. It's Barber Motorsports Park is a beautiful, absolutely beautiful facility. A little expensive to damage their Armco. I had to get that in there because I knew if I didn't, Jay would. But beautiful facility. If you do get the opportunity to head out there, if not for the IndyCar race this weekend, head out to Barber Motorsports Park one of these days. You owe it to yourself.
All right. Thanks for that promo. Jay.
Well, in that case, I'll take the shot at Andy. As Dave Moody says, he occasionally has wild hair idea days, but today's not that day. So you got to hold on to that thought there, Andy.
Man.
Follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I do want to give a for real good shout-out from Talladega Weekend. 90 years old, Red Farmer got second in the feature with the crate racing late model. They're at Talladega. Unbelievable.
That's amazing. Definitely a Hall of Famer right there. Okay. Andy.
CB14 fan on Twitter, and good to be back tonight, and hoping to do the same for Thursday.
All right. Looking forward to that. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including our website, fanforracing.com. Big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you. We did have Sean Hingorani back on the show this week as he had back-to-back wins for Venturini Motorsports in the ARCA West, which is amazing. They're going for those championships in both the East and the West, and Sean said that he will be racing at Dover this weekend, so that's going to be exciting. So, again, take a listen to that interview. I did try to get Jason Schultz on for this Thursday night. He says he's a little too new at Trackhouse Racing to come on the show just yet, but he does want me to come back and ask him sometime this season. He does want to come back onto the show at some point. So we'll see if we can't get Jason on the show at some point in the future. And then also a big shout-out to our Fan for Racing crew, Sal Segala, who did the review part of the show with us tonight, and then, of course, Andy Lasky, Jay Huseman, and Mike Orzel. I appreciate each and every one of you. We always have diverse ideas and thoughts about what's going on in the NASCAR world, and it's always fun to talk about it here on our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night. Jay and I will be back this Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Fan for Racing Radio.
Good night, guys. Looking forward to it. Good night.
Good night, everybody.